and welcome to Two Fat Expats. And when we say fat, we're not talking bathroom scales or excess luggage. Two Fat Expats are all about making the most of your expat adventure and filling it up with as much as you can so that when it's all over, there's no regrets. You've lived a fat expat life. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat who's based in Doha, Qatar, and I'm joined by Nikki Moffat. Hello. Another Aussie, but Nikki's in Hamburg, Germany. We've lived in 12 countries between us. We consider ourselves experts in all matters of the geographically challenged. Between us, we've given birth in 6 countries, and we know what it's like to pack up yet another kitchen, start looking for another job, and wave goodbye to that brilliant hairdresser it took you 12 months to find. We've both made those first steps into the brand new office, or worse, the new school, and at times we've found ourselves jobless, friendless, and starting afresh all over again. Each week we talk to expats who are from all over the world, and we discuss our favourite finds, our biggest stuff-ups, and we get the best tips for packing it all in. Okay, are we ready to go? Let's do this. Moffat, how are you? And I should say, I hope you can hear me. I know we're doing it on Skype today because we're making the most of things. But how are you? Check, check, 1, 2, 3. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can't see you and I can't see anything else because it's pitch black outside. Back to the grey, drizzly skies and dark mornings and afternoons and everyone I meet asking me about the bushfires. In fact, yesterday we had a bake sale at school with all the Aussie parents and staff, and there were all sorts of cupcakes and honey joys and chocolate crackles and Anzac biscuits, and one lady made 100 meat pies. Unbelievable. and I got there too late, but it was amazing. It was really amazing. And everyone wore blue to school to signify rain, the hope for rain. So no, it was really made you feel a little bit closer to home when you're so far away.
Oh, that's so good. That's so good. Just touching on what you were saying about that, everyone asking about the bushfires. I mean, you just realize as an expat how far that news traveled, don't you? When you're standing in the mall at, you know, Gap, and the shop assistant from Lebanon says, hey, how's everything going in Australia, after, you know, they've asked where you're from and whatever. How's everything going in Australia? Like, you're back to being the Australian ambassador again, aren't you? Like being the the official commentator on how it is.
But it's quite interesting because a lot of the Australians here, they went home over the summer. So they, our northern summer, so they didn't go home over the Christmas break. They did other things. And having someone that's gone home, it's really, it's a different kind of feel. Like everyone wants to know what was happening. And but everyone here is also, in our school community, is also impacted in some way in that, you know, a family member or their old house or something has been under threat or evacuated.
Yes.
Or it's amazing really how impactful it is when you see that a community that's not really connected living outside the country and so many people have been impacted indirectly in some way. It really,
yes,
it gives you an idea of the scope of the whole thing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, on a personal level, Nikki, we talked about this before, about your block of land was sort of in an area where it was, you know, that you were safe in the end, but there were bushfires around you. And at our beach house, there was nothing around us. It was basically across the sea and in an island called Kangaroo Island. But you could smell it like it was in your backyard. It was bizarre. We had ash on our back table every morning while the fires were going on, and that smoke, it was the most hazy, eerie feeling across the water because it was like a fog, but of course it was smoke. Now, I was going to ask you, Nikki, are you also getting, at the same time as you're having the bushfire conversation, are you also having people want to talk to you about Australia's view on climate change?
Yes, and yes, pretty much. So,
yeah,
of course, because that's part of the the narrative and the conversation, and certainly it's big in the media. They don't mention the bushfires without mentioning climate change at all. So, yeah, that's also coming up a lot.
Mm. So I went out to dinner with a couple of Australians on the weekend, and we were talking about this because I had been to the orthodontist with my son, and our orthodontist is from Syria. And the conversation with my orthodontist, because he was from Syria, he came here to Qatar, and he's now emigrated to Canada, but he kind of comes back and forth to Qatar, which is how I'd got to see him. But we used to have all these conversations about Australia and immigration, because, of course, immigrating to Australia was just way too hard for him, and he ended up going to Canada. And he used to talk about Australia and not immigrate Seamus, but sort of talk about how it was very hard, and the vibe from people in his network was, you know, Australia wasn't really immigrant friendly. And now this conversation, when we've gone the last time, he said, oh, how are you guys with the bushfires, blah blah blah, what are you going to do about climate change? And I thought, holy moly, now we're not only bad with immigration, but we're also frowned upon with our climate change denying. Well, I won't say that our Prime Minister is a denier, but he definitely doesn't have a gold star, does he, when it comes to.
I found the whole conversation around climate change in Australia when I was there very interesting. I found that it's hugely controversial, which I didn't really expect. It's gone to the edges, as everything seems to do. There doesn't seem to be any middle ground in that. You know, there are the people saying, well, we're only 0.1%, and if China and India don't do anything, then we're not going to do anything. And then there are the other people that said, well, if every country that's that much does something, then that's 80% of the world. So, you know, it's really, I don't know, I found it quite confronting, because I, in my overseas expat bubble, always think, oh, Australia, we're more practical, you know, we're a bit more centrist. We're not as extreme in our views. But obviously that's not true because of what we've said about immigration and also now climate change. So I'm just thinking I'm deluded.
I don't think you're deluded. I don't think you're deluded. And I do think there is, I think, Nikki, after you left, and I'm not sure if you saw it, we now have our science minister who's saying, okay, we're now going to stop even talking about that climate change could possibly not be real and just accept that it is real, and what are we going to do about it? And so I think there definitely is a scope there, and I think, you know, this is probably the end of our Prime Minister because of this. But I do think, you know, with all of this kind of international backlash, I wondered whether we had become the new South Africa. You know, like in the 80s, Nikki, when we were kids, you know, South Africa used to cop a beating internationally, you know, for its apartheid laws, and, you know, but it was a bit, I guess you would have said, on the nose back then. And now I just feel like Australia is very much on the nose in a funny way.
Yeah, but I think it's also peppered by people's disbelief that, gee, I thought Australians were nice people, and I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit hit and miss. I don't know.
Anyway, that's our little bit about politics. We've probably got far too political. Nikki, this week we're going to talk about living apart. And this came from a post from one of our members on the Facebook group, the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, I should say, who sent in a note saying, my husband and I are just about to embark on a time apart. It's going to be anywhere between 6 months to 2 years. What do we do? And you immediately sent me a note going, are you serious? Did you just post that? Because basically her life sounded exactly like your life at the moment.
I did. Well, I thought the first thing I'd be receiving is lots of private messages from people saying, don't worry about your marriage, it's going to be okay. Because I thought that it couldn't read any more like me if it was me. although I don't profess to be that worried about my relationship, but anonymously, maybe I am. So I did send it to you, and then it generated a lot of discussion, and a lot of people with experience commented, and there was some really great feedback on there. But really, Kirsty, you and I both do it. You and I both live separately from our husbands, and that's the other thing that came to mind, that we are actually both living this in different ways.
Yes, and there's many different ways that it's done, but I think very commonly in the expat world, you know, it is very common in the expat world. You know, like you've said, Nikki, you can have a partner who's constantly traveling, or you can have what you and Sam have, where you're living in different countries. And you can also have, you know, what my husband and I have, which is, you know, we're in different countries for blocks of time at the moment due to children and work and whatever. I mean, Greg got home last night, just after midnight from Vietnam, and tomorrow I fly out to go back to Australia because I've got to put my second and third child back into school and do all of those back to school things. I should say a special shout out to my sister who has happily looked after my bigger, you know, my teenagers for the last 2 weeks so I could come home, you know, and be with my other child. But yeah, it's a constant juggle, isn't it?
It is. And there are some people that do it like Sam and I do it, which is like, so every weekend or every couple of weekends we have a weekend together. And then there are other people that live a 14-hour flight apart and don't see each other for a month at a time, or 2 months or 3 months at a time. So, and as I think, a special shout out to the people who live in one place but their partner constantly travels, because it might seem that they live with their partner, but really when your partner travels 3 weeks out of the month, or 4 weeks out of the month, or indefinitely, you know, it's tough. It's like they're living in another country, and people might not look at those people with the same level of empathy to think they think that they're living in the same country. He just travels a lot, or she just travels a lot. It's still the same kind of thing. You still I think, the same situations.
Yeah. And if you're doing it with small children, it is rough. When we lived in Canada, we had 4 small children. And my husband travelled, I think we worked out it was 75% of the time when we looked back over his going in and out. And, yeah, it is really tough. I remember there was one particular time where Greg had been to Paris, and he was in Paris. And you can imagine what it's like when you're home with 4 children, 4 very young children, and your husband's in Paris and you're like scraping the spaghetti off the floor while he's out telling you, oh my God, this pate is incredible. And I can remember, as sort of as an afterthought, he'd stopped at the airport and bought a can of pate for me and arrived home with this can of pate. Well, that can of pate, I tell you, it didn't stain the
cut the mustard.
Yeah, it did not. So yeah, it is. It's really hard, and it's that, how do you stay connected? How do you remember who you are and what you are together, and how do you keep that relationship going? It's always fascinating what people's worries are, because I think there is always this element with, in the expat world, if someone's particularly, you know, traveling through Asia or doing whatever, where there's some idiot that is going to say to someone, oh, well, you know, he'll get a girlfriend there, or he'll do whatever. I mean, surprisingly, they don't seem to say the same thing about women who are traveling through Asia.
I know, right? Why not? Uh-huh.
Yeah,
you have exactly the same access to whatever it is that you might want to be doing, which is usually go back to your room and have room service and go to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that, of course, is not advice. That's just someone's opinion, do you know? But, yeah, that one always sort of gets to me, why people feel the need to say that, because that stuff happens everywhere. And you don't have to be traveling through Asia for your partner to decide that they're going to pick up some extra loving on the side. They can do that wherever they are. And I just think it's such a cliche that people forget that in the everyday world, people have affairs and flings and whatever. You don't need to be traveling through Bangkok for that to happen.
No, 100%. So, Kirstie, what do you do? What are the things that you do? And it's really, when you have kids, it's for your family as well as for your relationship, because there's sort of two things you have to manage. So what do you guys do?
So as a family, we have the WhatsApp chat, right, which is our family chat, and everybody throws stuff in there. And we do have to constantly say to our children, you know, don't forget to just keep reconnecting in the WhatsApp chat. And we actually had a really good family meeting. And I think this is part of it too, is don't just expect these things are all going to happen. You need to sit down with your kids and your partner and all discuss what sort of communication you'd like to have and what you'd like to see happen. So we had a family meeting just before the end of the holidays, and we talked about what we were doing financially as a family and why we were doing what we were doing at the moment and why things sort of looked how they looked. And I think our children understand completely why Dad works in the job that he works in, why Mum's going back and forth, what we'd like to do as a family, as in which holiday we'd like to go on, where we'd like to live, you know, what house we'd like to have, you know, sort of next for people to live in, so that those goals are very clear to get off to the start of the why we're doing this. But then I think those daily calls, as much as you can, are really, really important. And perhaps you and your partner have to have a set time that you chat, because it's, I think, Nikki, I don't know what happens with you and Sam, but if you don't have that set time, quite often time just gets away from you, and it's never ever convenient. You know, I'm in the shower, I'm having breakfast, I'm just jumping in the Uber, I'm just doing this, or I'm in the car with the kids or whatever. I think you need to make that time and have that daily chat.
Yeah, we actually don't do a daily chat, but I now just put a stream of consciousness into our private WhatsApp chat. So yeah, I think there are so many things that happen that I think, oh, I should discuss that. Like when I see Sam on the weekend, I'll talk about that. And I thought, you know what? That's what I'm going to forget. It's the pairing.
Yes.
But
yes.
So what I do is now I just so before this call we were just talking about before we started recording about how I watched a movie with my son the other night, and it drove me a little bit crazy because he was chatting all the time. So I just put all that into a chat with my husband, all the things he was saying, what we were talking about, everything, because I thought that's something that would, if he was here, he would have been with us and we would have had that conversation together. If I don't write it down now, he's never going to get to experience that moment. And even via chat, he won't experience the moment, but if something interests him, he might ask me or ask my son about it. So just that kind of thing. And then yesterday I just threw in some things about, I don't know, something a coach said at school. And so I've decided that even if I can't make that time every day, which I find more difficult, and we haven't done this for as long as you guys, so, you know, maybe that will be something that's more important to me in the future, that I just throw anything into the chat. And if he responds, and not be offended if he doesn't respond. Like once you see the two little blue ticks and there's no typing, Sam is typing.
Yes.
Because to be honest, he's working, I'm working. And as I explained to my colleagues yesterday, I'm leaving now, but I'm going to my other job because like I work with a bunch of millennials who go home and do what they want. I said, I don't get to go home and do what I want. So I get to go home and do other stuff. So I've decided that I'm not offended if he doesn't reply. I just want to put it down there so he has the information and he can do with that what he wants. But it's just keeping the options open.
And that not being offended is a really strong point, because there's always going to be glitches. There's always going to be some sort of misunderstanding. And so you can't take it to heart. Like if there's not an immediate answer, or, you know, someone forgets, you know, that you told them something four chats ago, that something happened or whatever. You have to sort of recognize that there's always going to be those misunderstandings in communication when you're dealing that way. I thought someone in the group said you have to fake it till you make it. And I think that is a really good point of, you know, maybe because I think, you know, sometimes when you live apart, and you and I have talked about this, Nikki, before, is you can get very comfortable in your own space. And I go to bed when I want to go to bed. I watch what I want to watch. I eat what I want to eat, you know, all those things. And you know, maybe sometimes it's a bit annoying when someone comes back into your space. Even as happy as you are to have them, you know, they've kind of upset the apple cart in that way. So I think you have to recognize that's going to happen as well.
And I think both people have to recognize. So I think there's a lot of time I spend saying to the kids, and, you know, dad's not here all the time. And when he walks in and this is the way we always do it. And then he'll say, why are you doing it like this? Or, you know, and we're like, because this is the way we do it when you're not here, because it's easy, because this is how we roll. So I try to pull them aside, like not to have a big blow up and all yell at each other, but to pull them aside and say, you know, you got to think about it. You know, dad's not always here, and he misses these moments, so it would be better if we did it this way, or think about how he feels. But I think it's a two-way street. I think the person who's walking in can also feel quite put out and think, well, why doesn't everyone conform to my way? Because I'm the one missing out, so I should get the better stuff now. But like part of the agreement, or the unspoken agreement, or the spoken agreement, depending how much you knew or could anticipate in advance, is that these things will happen. And the fake it till you make it and the glitches thing is 100% true. And so if everyone just puts on, like takes a breath, and I'm not the greatest at doing that, but take a breath before you give the irrational or immediate response and just think about it and then try and sort of make it feel better. You know, fake it till you make it can work in many occasions.
Yeah. And have those mutual things that you're doing together, even though you're apart. So maybe you're going to watch a series together, because, you know, there's always been this thing of, you know, you start watching a Netflix, you know, series together, and then one of you goes away, and then, oh, you're going to watch that without me or whatever. But maybe watching it without me doesn't need to happen if you're both in two countries. Like you can still say, okay, I'm going to watch episode 3 tomorrow, and you both watch it and then discuss it still. Like it doesn't have to be that the world stops because you're apart.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And just the other night my daughter said, Mom, can you get out of Netflix? I want to watch something. I said, why? What are you talking about? She said, well, dad's watching Sex Education and you're watching something else. And I was like, oh, yeah, good. Well, I've watched that this week too, so I'm glad dad's watching that. I said, but no, I'm cooking. You can watch it later. But yeah. That's true, and so we do also have a group family WhatsApp chat, but my kids are not ideal at responding to things. So, you know, it's one of those, you got to put things in there. If they don't respond, they don't respond. You just got to let it go.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the reasons of our family chat, is we wanted to explain to the kids what it feels like and looks like when someone doesn't respond. Do you know that you're in there? And because we have some children who are great. We actually had one child that did the old TLDR, the too long didn't read. That was our youngest. So, but now I have noticed there is far more of it, you know, even if it's just a great job or that's really nice or whatever, that they are making a far more concerted effort, because I think once they kind of had it explained to them about how you can sort of feel like you're talking into a vacuum, they were far more conscious of it, which was great.
The other thing is, so what we've talked about there with communication is a lot for bigger kids, so kids that have phones or devices or whatever. With little kids, often I know a family that just, they would set up a Skype call at a meal. So they just put the parent on a computer or an iPad at the table. And there wasn't the expectation, because with little kids, I mean, I know you would have done it too. You get your grandparents ready to go on Skype and you say, okay, we're going to do a Skype call with grandma. And then you can't get one of them to say one single thing. And they run in the picture and then run out. And then the grandparents are disappointed. Everyone's disappointed. And it's just, it's a palaver. So if you just have them set up at a table for a meal, and or if they're doing colouring in or something, and you're not forcing them to actually interact, you just they're just there doing something, and the on-screen parent can ask a question or throw in a comment or make a comment, and it's not, it's just the other, obviously the person that's not there has to have a little bit more patience in the process, but it's just part of doing it. I actually had a friend in Hong Kong who did it every morning with her father. So the kids had breakfast with their grandparents every day. And it was such a routine for them that the grandfather was just there by, you know, in virtual reality at the end of the table. And you know, after some time that they would just easily have conversations with him. But when they weren't having conversations, he was still just part of their routine and part of their day.
And Nikki, I have done that with my own children. When I was, you know, having radiation and having to be away from the kids, and I was in Australia having medical treatment, my kids would do that every morning. They'd just put on the iPad, put it on the table, and I would just be there. And I think that's it, isn't it? People just need to feel that you're there. You know, maybe they don't need to talk to you, but they just want to feel that you're around, and that if they did need to talk to you, they could. And they just want to have you around. And so quite often I'd be sitting there working away and they'd be having breakfast and I would get slotted into things here and there. But it didn't have to be this constant, you know, because sometimes you don't have things to talk about all the time, or you don't want to. You just want to eat your Weet-Bix, or you just want to, you know, do whatever, have someone. But I think, that's a really, really good point.
And the other thing is that the person that's not there can think, well, that's a half an hour, and if I really got that much time. Dude or lady, if you're at home, you'd be spending more than that time with your family. I think it's important to remember, this is my family time. This is the time I'm setting aside, even though I'm on a business trip or I'm away and I'm working very hard. This is the time I'm setting aside to be with my family. So I think that's also important.
Yes. Yeah. And I think the other thing, I'm not sure if we've already said this about, is sort of having a good idea in your head of how long this is going to be for. I think a lot of people get a bit caught with, oh, it's only going to be for 6 months, and then it, you know, it stretches out to 1 year or 2 years or whatever. I think you've got to have an idea in your head of exactly how long this is going to last, so that you can plan for it and know what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I agree. And so that's a lot of stuff about family things on a personal, on a one-on-one level with your partner. So maybe you don't have little kids, or maybe you have big kids, or, you know, you still need to reconnect with your partner. So the fake it till you make it also works there. And just in the time you spend alone. And if there is some kind of routine, like I know my husband and I, when he's home, every Saturday morning, we walk together to the dry cleaners to drop the shirts off. And then we go to our local market, and then we go and sit in a coffee shop for about an hour. And that's just our way and of reconnecting and chatting and catching up and talking about what's happened and what's going to happen next. And it's just a bit of a routine. And when we came back from Australia, we'd been there for 3 weeks. And my husband was spending one last weekend and then going away for 2 weeks. And he said, come on, we got to go, we got to go. I said, do we really have to go? He said, yes, we do. It's our routine. We've got to do it.
Yes, so,
and he's That's right. It is important. Yeah, he was pushing me to get out of bed and go. And I did. And it is important for us both to do it.
No, it is. And I think someone else was saying, you know, don't stop doing the fun stuff for yourself. And I think that's a good, because I'm very guilty of that, where I'll think, oh, you know, Greg's not here, I won't go to that because it won't be fun without him, do you know? Or you know, I'll feel bad that I've gone to that fun event and he's at home, you know, or he's in a different country, you know, not being able to do that. And I think you have to really stop doing that because you're stopping yourself from living your life, do you know? And that, I think that's the fastest way to some sort of depression is, you know, just hunkering down, you know, indoors and not seeing people like you usually would.
Yeah, so that's a two-way street. So you've got to keep doing things for yourself, but also the person who's away should also do things. So if they get an opportunity to do something that they're never going to get an opportunity to do again or is very rare because they happen to be in a certain location, they should do it because it's not about, oh, we'll come back here together. Sure, after you do it, say, oh, we should totally come back here together or as a family. But everyone should be still living. Like, that's about living a fat expat life. Take the opportunities that are available to you.
Yep, exactly. And it all comes down to trust, because I wonder whether people get too scared about, oh, what if my partner goes off and joins another group and, you know, has a better time without me and, you know, or finds a whole new friend group or whatever. And it just, that just comes down to trust in your relationship. And if you've got those things going in your mind, it's time for you to sit down and talk to your partner about it. So a lot of people said in our group about how that they had particularly unhelpful friends who commented or made judgment. Did you see, like, I have a girlfriend living here at the moment and she posted in the group because she has a sensational job here, like a really, really great job. But she's reached the stage where her children, you know, they feel they need to be back in the UK at schools in the UK. And so husband has gone back to the UK and she's here doing this great job, and she's kind of negotiated her employment situation so that she can do have a lot more flexibility and go back and forth to London. But she said the judgment she has received from friends and the sort of, you know, comments that people have made that have really hurt have what's been harder than anything.
Yeah, I think that's really tough because, again, I don't think a man would get that same feedback.
God, no. No.
And it's a sexist viewpoint, and sadly it gets perpetuated by women a lot of the time. I hate saying that. But there's more support and empathy. And sure, you know, you can't cut off your lifelong best friend for saying a harsh word, but you can, but it does lead you to doubt yourself and what you've done. So, you know, there's got to be a line that you draw and say, okay, I can't be dealing with that. You know, it's got to be about not necessarily positive, but supportive and empathetic viewpoints.
Yeah.
You know?
And you've got to find your sentence that nips it in the bud, I think. You know, like, Nikki, when we first started doing this, we talked about finding our sentence for the, so what do you do if you had been an expat who'd travelled around and, you know, you didn't want to be standing at that party where someone went, oh, so what do you do? And you didn't have the right answer. And I think maybe that's it too. If you guys are living apart and you're having to do this at the moment, find your sentence that best describes what it is for your family that you're doing. Because I find I have to defend my family all the time. And it started from the minute, you know, the first child went off to boarding school to then having, you know, three there and then the back and forth and, you know, being in different places at different times. And now I find I get a lot of judgment about keeping one child here when the other three are elsewhere. Do you know, people say, oh, that poor thing, do you know, how's he coping, and do you know, all of that. And it's hard to keep strong and go, no, even if you know that you're doing the best thing for your family at that time and that everybody is, you know, doing well, it's very, very hard to look at those puppy dogs guys and it stay strong.
Yeah, it's like the people that say, I could never do what you're doing, be an expat. So that's fine, you know, like it's just another version of that. So you just have to you have to make a decision and push on one way or the other. So I think that's quite a good set of tips there. We can enunciate them perhaps a little bit more clearly in a list on the website.
Well, what I'm going to do, Nikki, is I'm going to put all of these down together and we will do the list and whatever. But I've also got a couple of interviews that I'm working on with women who have done this very successfully and had great advice. And Nikki, you know, with our expat magazine, this is exactly the type of thing that we need to have in our expat mag, is we'll have the audio and we'll have the tips all down and we'll get it all to you in a nice little PDF where you can sit down and read it at your leisure.
Perfect. Excellent.
Okay.
Okay, Kirsty, what are your three favourite things?
Okay, so I'm only going to choose three. What am I going to choose? What am I going to choose? I would say one of the things I really enjoyed was Killer Inside, which is the Aaron Hernandez story. Have you heard that story, Nikki, or seen it?
No, it keeps popping up. Keeps popping up as a suggestion for me. So now I'm going to have to watch it.
And did you follow it? Did you follow it in America when it all went down? Yeah. Look, I didn't follow it in America when it all went down. I really didn't know much about it at all, which I wonder whether maybe that's what made it more interesting for me, was as the sort of revelations about his private life and what was going on behind the scenes was like, holy moly, this is a story. I just couldn't believe the correlations with him and the white car being chased by the police down the highway. Like, it was just so O.J. Simpson-esque in it. But no, look, it's a great little series on Netflix. It's only a three-part series, so it's a good one if you sort of want to knock something over quickly. And it looks at not only the pressures of his sexuality and not being able to be himself, but also concussion and what concussion does to the brain, and that perhaps that's what was going on with him as well. But just, you know, back to, there's a guy who was on a $40 million. So for people who haven't heard of the story, Aaron Hernandez played for the Patriots in the NFL, and he was sort of a superstar on a $40 million package. And he also murdered, it's been proven that he murdered a couple of people along the way. And so there's a story behind the story. And I think it's really well done. What about you, Nikki? What's something that you've seen?
Well, you know, planes, a good thing about spending 40 hours on planes is that you can watch a show. There's no time limit. Like, if you think, oh, I wouldn't bother watching that show if I was sitting down on Netflix at home and I only had an hour to choose something. Yes. On a plane, there's free range. It's like 14 hours to go. You can choose anything. I watched this amazing series, actually, called Wisting.
And did you watch that on no, you weren't on a Qatar Airways flight, were you? You were on
Emirates. Yeah, we went through Dubai. Okay. So I watched it on that, and I'll find out where you can watch it online. You can watch it online, I'm sure. It was called Wisting. Anyway, it was a Norwegian. It was about a Norwegian detective, and he's challenged by two of the most difficult cases of his career, and he has a daughter who is a journalist, and she investigates crime, and so that all sets up the whole premise for you. But it's one of those things where it's in Norwegian and it's dubbed. It has subtitles. So you start watching it, and it's not bad for a plane, subtitles, because, you know, the sound's not always great, et cetera, et cetera. But I realized that other people's, and it's something to do with the subtitles, and it's something to do with other cultures, but there's not as much talking in other TV shows as there is in English shows. I think English TV shows, there tends to be a lot more dialogue, whereas I felt about this show when I was watching it, there's less dialogue, and so you have to, the pictures are more meaningful because you're watching the situation, whereas I think there's just as much meaning in the pictures in an English-speaking show. It's just there's more dialogue, so you might be distracted from watching the scenery. I don't know. Maybe I was hallucinating on plane. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it's sort of an 8 or 10-part TV series, and I would highly recommend. Okay, that's my first one. What about you? What's your second one?
Okay, I watched Mystify Michael Hutchence, and I think this came out in about October last year, maybe earlier than that, and I didn't watch it at the time because I thought, oh, no, I've watched all the Michael Hutchence stuff. You know, I've watched the different mini-series that they've had with him on Australian television, and there was a different documentary, you know, recently as well. So I didn't bother. And then the other night I thought, oh, yeah, I'll watch it. It was on ABC iView. And it was fantastic. It was so good. This one is, and it's just called Mystify Michael Hutchence. And this one uses his home videos, and it really has comments from the people that haven't really spoken before. Kylie Minogue talks, every girlfriend sort of talks from, because he really had very long-term relationships. I think there's sort of four main sort of girlfriends before Paula. And then they have Paula's best friend, but they have his brother. But he was an expat, so I guess that there's that interest there of he was the Hong Kong kid and broken marriage. But what was really interesting was the whole thing about him losing his sense of smell and taste. Did you know about that, Nikki, about the accident he had?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, this is what makes it interesting. One of my favourite books is a book called Perfume by Patrick Susskind. And it's can you remember Perfume? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I loved Perfume, right? Well, it turns out it's one of Michael Hutchence's favourite books too. He actually gave it to Kylie Minogue. And when you listen to how intense their relationship was, it sort of all makes sense too of what he called her and what she was to him and whatever. But he was a guy that was intensely into the senses. Do you know, he loved poetry and he loved food and he loved wine and he loved, you know, he was really into what a certain smell could do, and that's why he loved that book. And so fast forward to when he's dating Helena Christensen, they're out on their bicycles going to get a pizza, and he gets hit by a taxi and he hits the back of his head and is basically concussed and knocked out, and he has a brain injury, and he insisted that everybody kept it quiet, that nobody knew that he'd had this brain injury, that no one was allowed to discuss it or talk about it. But he lost his sense of taste and his sense of smell. But it really got me thinking, Nikki, about how this works with expats, because there's so many smells that I can smell and it instantly takes me back to another place. Do you know, like,
yeah,
I can
absolutely.
I smell dates and I'm in Libya. Do you know, I smell all these sort of things where you can almost pinpoint it down to, oh, that's Wednesday nights before netball training. Ridiculous things. But I think to lose that for someone like him, anyway, he was, he definitely was highly affected by this. Everybody talks about how different he was after this and how the anger issues that he had after this. And it really does, I think by watching this, you kind of get to the end of it and you go, yes, he committed suicide. That all that other stuff and all the other stories, he definitely, when you look at the timeline, and you also feel deeply for his first girlfriend that he obviously was very much in love with. Anyway, it's good. And she's the one that he wrote Never Tear Us Apart for. So it was really, really good. But, oh, my God, he is still as sexy in today's sexiness when you look back at those times. There's a shot of him where he's singing Listen Like Thieves, I think it is, when he's at Wembley, and he's got those infamous trousers on where one side's black and white stripes and the other one's stars. And he is just sex on a stick. Like he just oozed something, didn't he? He was amazing.
Yeah, he was. That's true. Yes. That's true.
So that would be me, Mystify Michael Hutchence, for the in excess people out there.
Okay, so on a not as upbeat note necessarily, Chasing Cosby, the podcast.
So I haven't listened to that yet.
I think it's like you were talking about the Aaron Hernandez and did I know his backstory. At the time, I followed it very closely, and my husband's a massive NFL fan, and, you know, the Patriots are quite the team in the US. They get a lot of press either way. And so we did follow it. But I think a little bit of time and a little bit of space gives a different perspective on it. So all the stuff that's in that documentary may not have necessarily been available or around or known publicly at the time. I think this is the same on the Chasing Cosby podcast. So it gives you, well, of course, I mean, you follow it in the papers and it breaks and you get the information that's out there now. But this is done by a journalist that was the first journalist to uncover this and had followed it for years and years and years. And so it really, I've only listened to the first two episodes, but it really, she takes you back. So she doesn't start, because when those scandals break, it starts sort of in the middle, right? Or at the end. It doesn't start at the beginning. It doesn't start at the first person who came forward, because as we know with these cases, the more that they come out, it's about the 54th person that speaks up that actually ends up being a winner. Yes. Because the first 53, you know, there's some reason or another that it doesn't happen. But in the first episode, there is a story of a woman and what Bill Cosby had done to her. And she told her mother, and her mother called him and said, listen, here, you know. Oh. And it's the whole story of, and she recorded the call. The mother recorded the call.
Oh, wow.
And so it uses the tape of this call about, you know, you gave these drugs to my mother. Anyway, the daughter had been a friend of Cosby. She saw Cosby as her mentor and he'd been guiding her. She was like a basketball coach. And she asked him for advice and he said, come over. And she'd gone to his house many times before. And he knew that she was only into homeopathy, so she didn't take any traditional medication or whatever. But she was very stressed about this decision she had to make for work. And so he said, look, have these pills. They're homeopathic. You know, they'll help you relax. And so she took them. And then that was the first thing. And she took the pills. And then she said to – and then she went – back home and she told her mother, and there was, I mean, not that night, but as time went on, she told her mother, she went to her home, told her mother, she was an adult, but this, she had a good relationship with her mother. Mm. And so her mother called Bill Cosby and said, look, what are these pills you gave my daughter? You know, because he'd said to her, oh, I'll send you the name of the pills. Like I'll send them so you can look up what was in them, etc. And anyway, so the mother called and said, you've done this to my daughter and you've taken the pills. Anyway, he offers to do all these things like pay for this and pay for that and all this kind of stuff on the call. And you hear it, you hear the way the mother's talking and the way that he's talking. And then you hear what happened in the press. So the press said, oh, mother tries to extort, you know, Bill Cosby for having consensual sex with the daughter, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's, you can see how easily these things just get twisted and pulled. And anyway, I'm so into this podcast. I just saw that this morning.
Oh,
there's a new episode,
so
I'm going to listen to it on my way to work. Yes.
All right, just quickly, look, I have lots of Australian things I want to talk about, but maybe I'll save that for next time. But because I've watched Ride Like a Girl and David Stratton's Stories of Australian Cinema and all those things, but we can talk about that later. And a great little Australian podcast called Little Green Pod. I don't know if you've listened to that, Nikki, as well.
I haven't listened to that one.
It's a great one, but maybe next week. But I wanted to say, because you talked about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood the last time we talked, and so I watched it on the plane.
Oh, yes.
Along with Ad Astra. So I had a complete Brad Pitt you know, plane ride. Ad Astra, fell asleep in, thought it was very slow, didn't get it at all, would have been, felt absolutely gypped if I'd gone to the movies to watch it. So I wouldn't rate it in any shape or form. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I found myself having to go and sort of chase up when I got off the plane what the real Sharon Tate story was, and was sitting there going, okay, I'm trying to work out why we've come to this. I thought Brad Pitt's performance was absolutely stunning, and I was absolutely transfixed by him, I have to say, thinking, how do you, like, your voice is still so beautiful and you're just so beautiful and you're so funny, which, I mean, the guy is having a massive resurgence right now, isn't from looking so irrelevant for a little while and now being, I mean, can we talk about that pic, the whole Jennifer and Brad at the SAG Awards and that pic of them together? How many times have you looked at that pic, Nikki?
Yeah, I have. You're right. I've looked at it quite a bit.
Yes. And did you feel, as a Gen Xer, did you feel a slight pang when you saw her walking away and him holding on to her hand? How did you feel about that?
Well, I just felt like it was a flashback to the wedding. I feel like they haven't really changed.
Yeah, you're right. I keep meaning to ask my children, like, is the next generation looking at it going, yeah, like, I don't get it, or who cares? Or is because of our children's obsession now with Friends and whatever, would they get it? But I think I was just really struck by how many women of my age commented on that picture and their feeling, like that they had so much feeling about Brad and Jen and whether they should or shouldn't, you know, be together or how that looked. And what I find interesting about myself is I couldn't give a toss about all this Meghan and Harry stuff at the moment and the royal family, but I am invested in Brad and Jen.
That is so funny. That is very, very funny. Okay, I'm going to forego my last favourite thing to hear you do I Spy with my expat eye because I really need to run out the door to work.
Okay, well, I can save it until next week, but it was just very quickly was I online behaviour with expats and people in our group, and I love our group and I think they're fantastic and we've been so very lucky, Nikki, that the feeling of the group has always been supportive and helpful. But I've decided I'm going to write about this. I've been invited to talk at something called the TLG group here in Doha. It's a women's group that meets every Tuesday, but they have one big event once a month. And but I'm going to write about how, as expats, we be more supportive online, because I think there is that whole thing of you can have a thread with 100 people all giving great advice and then one person who throws in their opinion, which is usually the god famous CEO, I could never do that or I would never do that. And it's just remembering that people don't need to hear whether you could do it or whether you think people should do it. The whole idea about being supportive online is that you say, oh, we went there or we did this and this is what worked for us or this is what didn't work for us, full stop.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why when we say, do you have some advice? I find it, that's what I try and focus on. Like, we're asking if you have some advice, not...
Yes.
And that means you've experienced it yourself or whatever. It doesn't mean what you think about the question.
Yes. Or else we would say, hey, give us your opinion on
this question.
This question. Yeah, you know, let's all talk about this woman's choices.
Yeah. And that's why sometimes when we get anonymous posts, I think, really, does that have to be anonymous? And then I see things like that and I think, yep, probably does. Probably has to be anonymous.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, that's sort of which probably isn't a spying with my little extra eye, but it was just something I'd noticed in our group of how a thread can just be so helpful and so uplifting and so great, and all you need is one person to come in and be very opinionated about something and it just ruins it. And, you know, Nikki, I have zero tolerance. But, yeah, that was just my little expat observation and I think it's worth sort of exploring more of our online behaviour in the expat world.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good chat. Got to run.
Enjoy your day.
Okay, I'll speak to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye.